Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everyone. Welcome to episode 219 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I am Trevor Anderson. I'll send you over to One Direction, their biggest fan, Jason Rugard.
Oh, thank you for putting that out there. Yes, today we'll be talking about the One Direction movie, our predictions on that, as well as The Getaway, or just Getaway if you prefer, and Closed Circuit. Also, talking some movies. Been a while since we did a review show, so we'll do a little review session about Oblivion, Spring Breakers, and G.I. Joe Retaliation. Light movie news today, although we'll be getting into the fact that Kurt Russell and Tony Jaa are in talks for Fast and Furious 7, and HBO is teaming up with J.J. Abrams and Jonathan Nolan, brother Christopher Nolan, on a Westworld series. That's a remake of the Yul Brynner film from the 70s. Also, Batman vs. Superman will be filming in Detroit, Michigan, $35 million in incentives to lure them there. And the big news that we missed last week as we were off air is Ben Affleck cast as Batman in that Man of Steel sequel. Our thoughts on that, as well as a myriad of other topics. Let's get into the game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
All right, we got a bunch of strange offerings this weekend, right? This is kind of the last.
The end of August.
Yeah, this is the dumping ground. But I mean, the One Direction concert movie, shouldn't this have been released Super Bowl weekend? Shouldn't they have just kept with the trend and done it?
I didn't know there was a trend.
I thought that's like when it was officially the time to release these kind of things. You know, I know they did the Katy Perry movie last summer, but these things started hot, and then they've really gone kind of cold. The Katy Perry one didn't do very well. The Jonas Brothers one didn't do very well. But, of course, the Michael Jackson and Justin Bieber one did well, and the Miley Cyrus one did fairly well. So where does this one land, you know? How popular is this band or this boy band?
Apparently, they're very popular.
You got the poster on the wall?
But you would have on the ceiling. You would have thought Katy Perry would have been popular, though. At least I would have thought.
Well, I have a Katy Perry poster on the ceiling myself, so
yeah, behind the One Direction one.
Exactly. But you know, these concert movies I think aren't nearly as inviting as they once were, because everything's kind of a reality show now, and there's so much. And these guys have their own show on some sort of channel.
Do
or
they?
The other, maybe that's the other boy band. I don't know. There's some sort of war
on Logo.
Oh wow. And if you don't know what Logo is, find that on your local cable provider. What are we doing, though, for this? So we're not doing a four-day weekend, are we?
I messed up over a box office ace, and I didn't mess up. I chose to do a three-day, damn it.
Damn right.
I left off Monday. I even knew it, but I absent-mindedly did it, so I'm just a moron. But so we're going to do a three-day because everyone else already put in their numbers and stuff, and I didn't realize it till too late, and I don't want to mess everyone else up. So we're just going to stick with a three-day. We're going to forget about Monday. Even though Monday will, you know, be a nice grossing day for the weekend.
Yeah, it's just another manic Monday.
Yeah, whatever. All right. So for the 4-day, we have all of our base. What do you call them?
Estimates.
Estimates. I don't know. Yeah, estimates. Well, I forget what we've been calling them. But 20 million is what is the baseline for the
for One Direction over the 4-day.
Friday through Monday. Yeah, for the 4-day.
Okay, so chop a day off there.
A quarter out of that, you know, maybe like 15 million. I don't know.
All right, so
it's a rough estimate. Do I? Oh, do I? I don't want One Direction sloppy seconds.
I know you and Mr. Todd Thatcher have been just eagerly awaiting the release of this film. You both have just been panting for it. So go for it, there, big guy.
All right, I will go 13.
Okay, well, I'm going to go significantly higher than you. I'm going to go 20 for the three-day period. I think this is going to do over 20 million for the 4-day. I'm thinking 22 to 23.
I have no idea how. I don't even know a One Direction song.
So I bet you know more than you think you know.
I probably do. You're right, if I heard it. But, I mean, I don't know it. So I have no idea how to gauge the popularity of this.
I think that this is the boy band that Taylor Swift has screwed like 2/3 of, but that could be numerous boy bands. I'm not really sure.
Well, good for them, I guess.
You want to feel old? Watch the VMAs. That'll make you feel like a dinosaur.
Yeah, I didn't do that. I can't do that anymore. Yeah. MTV is officially off my radar. You know, I just can't.
All right, let's talk about The Getaway, or just Getaway, because this stars another little tweener, Selena Gomez, who's starring in Spring Breakers, we'll talk about later in the show.
She's
but
not a tweener anymore.
I know, right? She's matured nicely. And
she looks young, though. Yeah, and Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, the poor man's Tom Cruise.
I mean, I don't know. Ethan Hawke always looks like he's dying.
Yeah,
he's perpetually playing a man either, you know, with like cancer or undergoing chemotherapy, or he's got AIDS or something. That's what he looks like, right? He doesn't look like he slept in the past week.
I want to hose the guy down. He looks very greasy. He always has. This reality bites. But
I like him.
This movie, though, is being sold solely on the fact that it's got car chases and wall-to-wall action, but not much of any. This reminds me of the late Warner Brothers summer release, like Chill Factor, you know? He's really...
Yeah, I love Chill Factor.
I know you do. You might like Getaway, too.
Yeah, probably will. It's a little... But to me, this is, you know, the oddity that because Selena Gomez is who she is, but also because Ethan Hawke's become somewhat of a hot property, this found its way to theaters. And normally, you would expect this to be straight to DVD, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they picked a good weekend for this movie because it's a 4-day. Will goose that opening weekend gross probably further than it should make. This has got to be along the lines of...
Well, for the 4-day, looking at $10 million estimated.
Oh, please.
You don't like that?
I don't think it grosses $10 million in its entire run. No, I don't like that. I'll go first, in fact. I think they're five.
For the 3-day.
They're lucky to get five on a 4-day, and I think that the 3-day for this is going to be even more miserable. I'm going to go 4.7, a smidgen of what Bullet to the Head did in its first 3 days of Super Bowl weekend. If this outgrosses Bullet to the Head, we got seriously problems.
Yeah, well, one of the issues you have with this clearly is, and we saw this with Spring Breakers, you may cast Selena Gomez, but if you don't cast her correctly, you're not going to use that whatever star power she might have, right? And this is clearly not going to fall into her fans, what they're going to want to see her in.
I mean, look, the girl's a doll, and she might be a real great blossoming screen presence at some point. I mean, you know, maybe she'll turn into the next Mila Kunis. I don't know. But at the moment, even if she's in her wheelhouse with things like Monte Carlo and these movies that are tailored towards her, they don't do all that well. So you put her in an action movie, especially one where she looks like a streetwise young girl, it's laughable. I mean, this trailer is laughable.
Well, I don't know what to do here. All right, you know what? I will go 3.5.
Okay, so we both think this is absolutely bottoms out.
I do, and because I totally screwed the pooch on Closed Circuit.
Yeah, if this outgrosses Paranoia, we
I already
be surprised.
Put my thing. You know what? I'm gonna. Should I be allowed to cheat?
No.
Wait, you are. You didn't put yours in.
Ah, hey.
Oh, yeah, you like that, right?
I dipped it in there real quick.
You know what? I'm changing mine.
Oh, well, look at this guy.
Am I not allowed to?
Can we go to the governor on that or the commissioner, Roger Goodell?
Hey, wait, I made the sign. I am the commissioner.
Okay, well, we got thumbs up then. All right, okay.
Oh, I'll eat it. I'll stay where I'm at.
You're turning into Sean Connery on Jeopardy.
For the 4-day, they get the estimate of Closed Circuit. We're not even going to talk about it. You don't know what it is. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's at $5 million for the 4-day estimated, which is clearly ridiculous. I'll tell you what the first 2 days have opened with here right after we're done. But I put in $6.5 million for the 5-day, which is a Wednesday through Sunday, because I had to quickly put in a number at Box Office Ace before it closed.
And you weren't aware that it played on less than 1,000 screens.
It only played on 800 screens. Box Office Mojo, I hadn't seen the update for the screens yet. I didn't pay close enough attention that it was a Focus release as well. So I totally screwed myself.
I'm cutting your estimate in half. I'm looking at what Phantoms did earlier in the year. That was the David Duchovny at Harris film. That only opened up with 500,000, far less screens, and that was a 3-day, so throw in the 5-day. It's probably going to end up like 1.7, but I'm going to go 3.1.
All right. I'll just stay at 6.5 because that's close enough. This is so small, it's not going to kill me.
All right.
And what has it grossed? Let's find out here. Let's just see.
Going on 2 days of release, nationwide release, right?
Two days of release. And let's see how many screens it's in. It might expand screens BTW on Friday. So it's at 862 screens right now. And as they do, sometimes when these open up midweek, they expand into Friday. So it might go over 1,000 because it was listed as wide. But on Wednesday, we scored $250,000. On Thursday, $260,000. This thing's done $511,846 in 2 days. It is a stinker, dead in the water.
Yeah, this is going to be lucky to hit $2 million for the 5 days.
I know, that's what I mean. It was, I should have, like, focus features. I'm not even sure what this is about. It stars Eric Bana, so I mean, right there. Even though I like Eric Bana a lot. It just has, and you can see by the rest of the supporting cast, we got Rebecca Hall, Julia Stiles. It's a no-go.
It's going for that late summer audience, the adult late summer audience that propelled movies to decent grosses like The American and The Debt and things like that.
Possibly, but this falls more in line with what a lot of the straight-to-video Nicolas Cage-type movies. That's what this reminds me of.
I think it reminds me more of like The International, that bomb that Clive Owen did a couple years ago, which is far more high-profile.
Fair enough, but I think Clive Owen is at least... I mean, a smidgen higher than Eric Bana, but neither one are, you know, big enough. This is, it's focus features.
Yeah, that should have told you right there.
Yeah, is what it is. At least it's not open to road, because then it would have just grossed $2.
Yeah, it would have been on video on demand at the same time.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's move on. Let's talk about some movie news.
What we got?
Been a while. Let's, elephant in the room here. The big jaw in the room. And not talking about Jay Leno. Ben Affleck cast as Batman.
Yeah, let's do this quick because there's been a million articles about this. Everyone's already put in. They hate it. They like it. Clearly, it's too early to really be able to tell. You have to wait to see the movie. For me, and let me ask you this because this is the question or the thing that really hit me. Does Superman versus Batman really hinge on who plays Batman? Mm-hmm. I think it hinges far more on Goyer and Snyder actually making a decent fucking movie together, right?
100% agree with you, which they were unable to do the first time out. So prove to me that you can make a good Superman movie, and then maybe we can start adding in the extra elements. But they haven't
done
that.
Ben Affleck, bad or good as Batman, is not going to be the thing that ruins that movie. I don't think he can be... Well, I don't think he can do a bad job at it necessarily, right? I mean, the worst case scenario is he does an average job.
So you're saying it's a moot point regardless.
Well, that's what I mean, because it's Ben Affleck. The guy's a professional, even if he didn't really fit the role, although you can kind of meld Batman a little bit into a Ben Affleck-esque type character, and you'll be fine with it. You know, it's just, you know, worst case scenario, he does it okay.
Comedian Patton Oswalt, who tweets and Facebooks about just about everything nowadays, actually wrote a nice essay defending Affleck, you know, his career and his choices and things like that. And fact that it was, you know, but the fact that like kind of like he was prepared for this because of, you know, how Bruce Wayne-esque he is, you know, the fall from grace and all that. Let's not skip over the fact this guy's got a great jawline. And we'll fit that cow.
Let's not skip over the fact that who gives a shit about his past? Do you really think he's going to connect with Batman because he's similar to that? That's all a bunch of bullshit.
It's in-house synergy.
Who's come
he's
to
got
his,
good. He's got a good relationship
crap.
With Warner Brothers.
It's a load of shit. Whenever you cast anyone, the casting is per the person. You know, however they act is what they're going to bring to the character. So, you know, on-screen presence is everything, not background. I can pretend. I mean, you're an actor. You're going to pretend.
I like Affleck a lot more than I like Christian Bale. So there you go.
We'll see. You haven't seen Affleck as Batman yet, so I don't know.
I'm talking about just as an actor outside of the franchise.
That might be fine to say that. I think I like Christian Bale. I actually probably like them equally. I really haven't seen Affleck do anything amazing. I'll put it that way.
I still recommend Hollywoodland for all of you out there that have... You know.
And he was good in that, but he's very – my issue with Affleck is very much – he kind of does a Mark Wahlberg. He's very mopey. And so I'm a little worried that we're going to get kind of more of a mopey Batman, the way they're kind of trying to spin it anyways. Feels like – but it could be – it could still be good. I don't know.
If you want to animate it a bit, Affleck, see Surviving Christmas in the – Mm-hmm. That's about as sprung up.
Yeah,
as he
I love
gets.
Him in comedies and stuff.
With the energy,
you know, he's a good. Yeah, he's. I like him on screen. He's very likable. I don't know if that necessarily works for Batman. You know, Christian Bale, I think, worked in that movie maybe because he actually wasn't very likable.
I prefer him over Josh Brolin, who they were speaking of getting him in the
role.
Yeah,
this is far better than the other people they were talking about, which you all know that I didn't like any of that stuff.
Yeah, so
I'm much happier with this.
You broke this news to me before I heard anywhere else, and you sounded like you weren't too keen on the idea, but now you sound like you maybe have come around to it because you realize, as I think most people should, that it doesn't matter who fucking plays the role, make a good movie.
Yeah, it was like everyone was immediately up in arms either way over it. And it was just like, who gives a shit, honestly, about your opinion or whether Ben Affleck is an Academy Award winner? Or maybe, you know, I have read all sorts of shit about this now where people have said, well, you know, it's a good thing that it's Ben Affleck because he's going to be able to get in there and help Zack Snyder really make that. He's not directing, people. He's fucking acting. Do you really think that Zack Snyder is going to hand over the reins to Ben Affleck because he's Ben Affleck now?
And as much as I like
Affleck, he's made a couple of movies. Like, I don't think he has that big of a head, number one.
He's starring in something that looks like a dog anyways, Runner Runner, coming out at the fall here. So he's not above making shit.
Yeah. Point, but yeah, state of play. You know, I mean, point being, he is Ben Affleck. You know, let's not get crazy about this now. I don't know.
All right. Well, this film will be shooting in Michigan. This has recently been announced that they're going to be shooting in Detroit specifically. And this is
They have him locked for a couple movies, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do, actually. But this movie will be filming because of a $35 million tax incentive, the tax break they get to bring all this big local production or Hollywood production into local markets. So I guess Detroit now is looking very post-apocalyptic, and they're going to use that because they're talking about...
Well, Detroit would be a very good Metropolis or Gotham.
As was Pittsburgh, you know, they used that.
Yeah, those big older...
Chicago and things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So a little brief news there on that. Speaking here of Batman still, keeping with the theme, Jonathan Nolan, who wrote the last film with Christopher Nolan, his brother, is in conjunction with J.J. Abrams to do a series for HBO based on Westworld, the old Michael Crichton book that was turned into a film about, you know, what, robots at a theme park.
Called Jurassic Park.
Yeah, right. This is Jurassic Park, is it not? But with robots. This is Terminator meets Jurassic Park.
This was the fun thing about Michael Crichton was that he would reuse the same idea like
intelligently.
And yeah, it was just great. I mean, who could get away with this? Make a movie about robots. This is basically about a theme park with robots as cowboys.
Right.
And they would rock around and you get to interact and be a cowboy kind of a thing. And of course, the robots go bad and start killing people and whatnot. Just like Jurassic Park, a theme park about dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs get loose and start killing people. It's pretty amazing.
And a good movie. If you ever seen that Yul Brynner image, you know, from 73 with the cowboy hat, it's fairly iconic. Yeah, he really is frightening in that movie. They've talked about remaking that movie on a theatrical release for many years. At one point, Cameron and Schwarzenegger were discussing it, and then many other directors and stars came through. That never materialized, but this series, I don't know why they're going to try to turn this into a series per se.
Well, because it's HBO, right? I mean, they were trying to do the same thing. Oh, it's a book, for starters, so it makes sense that you try to span that out maybe. I mean, this sounds kind of the same thing as what Grazer and with the Stephen King book.
Oh, with The Stand and The Dark Tower and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. You know, it sounds very similar. You go to HBO, pitch an idea of doing stuff. And it's J.J. Abrams. He likes episodic stuff, obviously.
Oh, serialized. He came from that world. So, yeah, he's very good at that. If you watch his movies, they're still episodic.
Yeah, so, and this kind of stuff is hot right now. I mean, you look at Under the Dome and things like that. So I think that, you know, timing is right for a Westworld HBO thing. I'd watch it.
Well, the original film is now 30 years old and very, very, actually 40 years old, I took it back, and very, very dated on top of it. It's not, has not held up well. So this is
it's cheap.
Old enough, though, to like get a good reboot, and you're not going to piss off anybody from the original, you know, that has. This isn't like a beloved classic, like you said. It's not Jurassic Park that we're remaking here. So I champion this.
No, and it is a book. So I think – I feel like when you remake things, it's not necessarily even a remake at this point. Right? I mean, you're just going to take the book and make it into another movie. I think that's fair to do.
This is going to run for – I mean, HBO is looking for their next big jump off because, you know, they have Game of Thrones right now, which is hot, but True Blood is going to be wrapping up here soon, and they need to keep these revenue streams going. In the last few years, they lost Sex and the City, then Entourage sprung up, and then when that was going out, True Blood sprung up, now Game of Thrones. They need things. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep that subscription rate high, and this might be – with these names attached to it, it's funny how the stigma of – you know, directors from features and actors, movie stars never wanted to get involved with television 15, 20, 30 years ago. But now it's a lot of them have come from the world of television as they did then, but they're not as shy as going back into it. And Abrams and Nolan both are big names for HBO to exploit on this project. And casting will be vital, too.
In the end, if you need to, you can do a mashup. You know, we've had Alien versus Predator. Why not Terminator versus Westworld?
How about Cowboys versus Dinosaurs? I think that's an Asylum film.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Well, the Fast and Furious films have cast just about everybody in Hollywood at this point, right? I mean, there should be like a special category at the Oscar for best support.
Yeah, I'm in the next one.
Best performance in a Fast and Furious movie. But hey, we got Tony Jaa and Kurt Russell possibly coming aboard in Fast and Furious 7. Okay.
Sure.
I mean, Kurt Russell didn't want to get involved with the Expendables.
This is just Expendables.
But he's jumping into the Fast and Furious franchise?
Well, I guarantee he's making more money on Fast and Furious than Expendables.
Well, okay, Bruce Willis. But at the same time, I mean, let's get him in there. This is cash.
Why? Who cares about an Expendables movie? Do you really think that him being in there is going to make that movie anything?
The worst part about it is, as much as I love the Expendables and those guys and that kind of stuff, I'm way more amped at this point as Fast and Furious 7 than Expendables 3.
I'm not amped about any of it. I mean, it's got 7 after.
You haven't seen 6, though.
Oh, crap. Oh, really?
It's like Police Academy 6, Cindy Under Siege.
Yeah.
Assignment to Miami Beach.
We've just gone too far. I can't.
Well, $800 million in global gross says they can and will, and audiences are still going to line up for this movie. And Kurt Russell is at one point. Remember, they were talking about getting him in as Batman and replacing Val Kilmer before Clooney had stepped into the role. You recall that?
No, but sure.
Yeah, I would have liked to see him. What he could have done as a Batman, and even the Affleck connection there. It, kind of the same jaw. I'm seeing it. It's very important, that jawline. As long as this Batman isn't going to talk like he's got Jolly Ranchers in his fucking teeth.
Well, he's going to talk like Ben Affleck. Might be the other problem. Hey, guys, what's up?
No, it's going to sound like he's from East Boston. Well, let's ponder that over a quick break, and we'll be back with our review for Oblivion, Spring Breakers, and G.I. Joe 2.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
No, you're wrong. All of you are wrong. Every one of you is wrong, wrong, wrong.
No, we're all right. We're all right. Except for him. And him. And him. Dear God in heaven, gentlemen. What is it like to be so wrong? What does it feel like?
To find out who's right or who's wrong, please check out the new season of the As You Watch podcast, available on iTunes and on Stitcher.
And call 777-FILM for all the latest Showtime. Remember that useless service now? 777-FILM?
777-FILM. I remember Movie Phone.
Movie Phone. I mean, this is like pre-internet usage.
I mean, if anyone remembers one of the best episodes or one of the funniest bits in Seinfeld was, of course, the Movie Phone thing where Kramer was getting the calls. But that may have been actually 777, whatever you were saying, but he was basically getting calls from people and he pretended to be the thing. Very funny. All right, moving on.
All right, what do you want to talk about first? Which one are we going to get into? Because
let's talk about G.I. Joe Retaliation, because it's the one that I think we're going to have the least problems, you know, connecting with on it. And basically, we both just love this movie, right?
Worst movie of the year so far.
I don't know if it's the worst movie of the year. It certainly isn't good.
It's contender. It goes in the top 10 of the year. This movie is real bad. Tell me those scenes early on with Channing Tatum where they're playing video games aren't inserted in there for everything that they said they were.
Real bad. I mean, all the Channing Tatum stuff is unnecessary, really. Forced. Actually, I felt the whole movie is very – it's a bad perspective on someone trying to make a sequel. We didn't need any of the – it doesn't have to have a connection to the first movie, number one. That's the first thing I realized when I watched this was, my God, why did they try to – do that at all? Why not just get rid of Channing Tatum? Just don't mention him.
Not only that, the nanobugs, which I thought we took care of those. That was the whole.
That didn't bother me so much as far as, well, they're hardly in it.
Pissed me off though. It totally. So it made the first one. You know, it just had no value to it. This movie is terrible. This movie is cheaply done too. I mean, Bruce Willis showing up, that whole bit is so tired by then that like
the one-liners are really bad in this too, and the scene. I mean, you want to talk about a bad scene. The scene where he, with a fake president, launches the nukes, and then blows them up, and then everyone else launches theirs and blows them up.
which you've seen a lot of times before.
Have you? Not like that. I mean, that is bad, bad, bad stuff. And everything has this fail-safe explosives built into it. It's why is North Korea? It's the most uninformed person wrote the script. Obviously, they've never read the news before. They don't know how anything works. It's like, oh my God.
The target audience has never read the news.
And again, this is one of those things where while I was watching it, I was having a discussion with someone. And basically, the idea is, you know, every movie is its own universe and you create that. So in the G.I. Joe universe, clearly the G.I. Joe television show all stuff doesn't exist, right? They're real.
Correct.
But still, you would expect things, either playing video games, doing all this stuff. So you have that culture is in here. So movies like Star Wars existed, definitely. So when Cobra Commander struts in and he's wearing some shit like that, why do you just naturally accept that? Aren't you thinking, God, this is weird? Or, I mean, to me, when they set that up in this, it means people are walking around like that.
You've now put way more thought into the script than the writer
did. It's insanity. Yeah, but the movie's so bad it lets you think about stuff like that. It gives you space to really think.
This might be one of the worst movies to ever gross over $100 million. I mean, this is a bad, bad movie. I don't know how they managed to get people into the theater or what the draw was. I saw it in a theater, unfortunately, earlier in the year. I immediately put this on my worst of the year. And I think this is the worst film of the year I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, the story flow is just horrible.
There's one
the
scene.
Joes are hardly in it. The Joes are in maybe half the movie.
The fight on the mountaintop there, well done, fine.
It was okay, then, but
it's not nearly as good as something like The Wolverine.
It just didn't – yeah, nothing in this movie had really any stakes in it involved. You know what I mean? Like it didn't seem to matter. It just kind of unfolded haphazardly and you were suddenly taken someplace else, and then you'd watch a scene and it felt like it was too abruptly ended and you'd be someplace else all of a sudden. Like, what is going on? Why?
You say abruptly ended. I was looking for the exit. I'm glad those scenes were over. I was counting them down on my wall. I mean, this was one of the longest 90 minutes I've ever spent in a theater as well. And this movie felt like it just, from the opening scenes, it was dead on arrival. There's no energy in that movie. It's just, it tries real hard, but it's like, John Chu doesn't show any sort of real style here. He just kind of half mimics the Summers style, which is in itself mimicry of Spielberg.
It so makes
you have like a seventh off Spielberg wannabe. It's bad.
He's nowhere near Summers. I mean, it makes you scared with, you know, that his name going forward.
Oh, with the talks of Star Trek? Get out of here.
Yeah, it's like, wow. Of course, obviously, he wouldn't write Star Trek. I mean, he's clearly a gun for hire.
Oh, he's Albert Payun.
And doesn't do anything special, yeah, with the what he's given. So, I don't know. What's the point?
Let's move on and talk about a film by a director who is known for his style, and that's Harmony Korine, the guy who made Kids and Gummo, some of the very beloved cult classics, although I find those films to be, revolting, and to say the least.
Really?
Yeah, Kids I used to enjoy, but, I mean, honestly, it's one of the most depressing films, and I can't stand Gummo.
I never liked Gummo. I do like Kids, though.
Yeah, so I guess I'm half on this guy. But Spring Breakers. Now, let's talk about Spring Breakers a little bit. I wanted you to give me your thoughts on this when you saw it, because you saw it after I did. What was going on in this movie? Is it not just what the preview offered? Too much art? Overly directed?
Yeah, to a point as you watch this, you realize the script's maybe 40 pages long.
It's the biggest, craziest spring break that anybody's ever heard.
There's
give me
a
fucking break.
Cutting. I mean, this movie was shot clearly very, very quickly.
Guerrilla style, for sure. Right?
Yeah, it was created in the editing room, and it's heavily, heavily padded with scenes that go on for far too long.
Oh, let's talk about some of those scenes. Are you talking about when the girls start singing Britney Spears for no reason?
Yeah,
or
that,
when
that
he gives head to a gun for no reason, or he's playing the piano? I mean, what is going on in this movie? And I wanted to like this movie at every turn because it's visually pleasing, not only the female leads, but because of the way it's shot. A lot of it is beautiful to look at, but some of it just...
Well, the first half an hour is horrible, I thought. It was just totally horrible. And
totally
it was really
all over the
too,
place.
It was just the setup was far too long in that to set all these characters and things up. It was like, I get it. You know, like, we keep going back to Selena Gomez. I mean, that's not a real critique, but okay.
It's a critique of something.
Yeah. You can find images on the internet, my friend. Don't, you know. Her name's Faith in the movie, and she's, you know, a church going.
Which is heavy handed from the jump. So,
but that's how this movie is. I mean, that was just a really good example I was giving of that. But yeah, I mean, there is thought put into this movie. It's unfortunately just, it was like unfinished. It's like they took something, like I say, a 40-page script that was unfinished, and they went out and they shot it and they padded it and they made it into a full-length feature. The first half an hour I hated. The last two-thirds of it I actually kind of liked. So in the end, the movie won me over.
Did you get sick of the whole theme of these girls are these little innocent angels, and then how can they do these things when they're these kind of virginal characters, but yet they're not because they're so advanced? No. You didn't get that? I just kept seeing that.
Didn't get that because, I mean, they picked them off one by one, right? They were each had a level at which things were acceptable to them. And they did that very well. I mean, they kept Faith outside of the group for that first half an hour even and all that. She was very apart from them. And she went her own way. The one girl, if you watched in the beginning half an hour, is always sleeping. She's there with the other two girls, but she's usually separated from them. And that continues on throughout, even when they meet the James Franco character, whatever his name is, Alan.
Alien.
Or Alien. Good Lord. And they keep her separate. And then she, of course, is the second one to leave the group after a while. Right. So there's thought put into it and things. But it's weird. It took, I think one of the reasons I liked it so much, you bring up the giving head to a gun and stuff, were things like that, where I thought, they're going to do this or that. And then they did something different. So I like that.
Franco is, the performances aren't bad for what they are. I mean, the
girls are really good.
Yeah, the girls are capable of doing something. They're doing it well. Franco is really good. And the problem, like you said, though, is padded. So you don't really know what.
And it's shot not well. I think for a couple of scenes, they really, the way they shot it and the way they cut it together didn't do justice to some of Franco's dialogue.
I would say that has more to do with the editing and not the shooting, because there are images in here that are very striking. So I think that they might have just had a bad editor or some. Because he said, Harmony Korine has said that when they released this, he wants to do like a remix version and let other directors recut it, because like you're right, it's probably just all raw footage that he's just throwing together in some sort of haphazard way, which he's done.
It looks like they went out a couple days and just shot random spring break stuff, and you know, and that's cut into this heavily, just random MTV style spring break shots, and you're like, what the fuck does this have to do with anything other than to eat up 5 minutes of my time
and to throw in it in the trailer to sell this movie? They somehow got this movie to about $20 million in a national gross, which I think is amazing considering how, like I say, artsy it is. You know, this is a very peculiar film, to say the least.
But I like that sometimes. I didn't like it the first half an hour, but once James Franco showed up, for some reason, he's like the rug in the Big Lebowski. You know, he really tied the scenes together.
He tied the room to him?
He did. It just, I don't know. It seemed to find a focus once he showed up, you know, which it didn't have, felt like it didn't have a focus when they were trying to get the money and figure all that stuff out. Was kind of like, okay, where the fuck is this going? I mean, I know they're going to go to spring break, so why do I have to take so long for them to get there?
Well, I'm like the guy pissing on the rug. I'm not housebroken, and I thought that this movie had so much potential, and I was really kind of interested in it. I just thought it was a good idea. Like, all right, well, because if the studios were going to make this movie, you know what we would have gotten, some sort of little love story, this and that. But then I thought, all right, Bonnie and Clyde aspect to this, or these girls are going to try something. And in the trailer, they were showing them singing the Britney Spears song. I thought of the Crossroads movie that she had done 10 years before with Zoe Saldana, which was really kind of trite. And I thought, this is something going to be good. And then you start it. Like you said, if you can get past that first 30 minutes, you should be able to watch like Francis Ford Coppola's Napoleon, the 4-hour-long like silent film.
Well, you know? I wouldn't compare it to that.
I'm serious. That movie's tough to get. Tonally, it's all over the place. You don't know what you're supposed to be. You got more out of it than I did, seeing the girl was outside the group and this and that. I mean, there's certain dialogue aspects that kind of point it, but I guess I was just kind of waiting for something to happen here. And it just took a long time for the mechanics to get together.
One of the things. I mean, I went all over the place with this thinking, oh, this is movie's going to be about this, this and that. And then it went on and on. And I thought, no, it's not. What the this is about nothing. And then suddenly it would snap back again. And oh, it is about that. And then, no, what is it? It's about nothing. You know, that's what this movie does. Like I say, there's 40 pages of solid written stuff in here. And there's like, and this is what, like a 90 minute movie?
Yeah.
How long was this? Yeah. So that's like half the movie is just filler. I mean, literally filler.
Which is why I give this a negative review. It sounds like you're on the fence or slightly positive.
I would give it 2.5 out of 4. I think just for the interesting, I would call it an interesting failure. You know,
I give it 1.5. I just call it a failure, but a good looking failure. All right, let's talk about Oblivion. This is a movie that has been splitting you and I now for some weeks as we've talked about this on and off air. And you caught this before I did. I am late to the party. And now I was really hyped on it, but since I've been kind of going over some of the details with you, you're convincing me that
We should say we're going to be spoiler heavy on this if you haven't already figured out the other two, although we didn't really spoil the other two.
Well, Oblivion, I think, is such a dense
film. This one we're going to be because it's dense, please. Things happen. I don't know if I call it dense.
When Cruz is fighting Cruz, I had to pause things.
There you go.
I thought I had passed out for a while. Yeah.
I tell you, this is a movie that starts off really with just freaking nothing going on, setting the world up, which is, you know, what the entire movie does, nothing but set the world up. And I called it right from the beginning, and I thought there's no way this is going to go down that way. Because it's just too simplistic. It's too stupid. They're going to do something else. And they didn't. They just did the basic thing. This, to me, belongs on the Sci-Fi Channel. You know, there's just nothing put into this. Because aside from a shitload of money and Tom Cruise, I don't get the allure here.
Looks great. It's very sparse in the sense that, like, not many people in this movie. You're right. There's, like, 6 or 7 actors in this movie.
Well, nothing happens. He flies around. He looks at this. He looks at that. You know, he's got a little cabin by the fucking lake.
That cabin scene. Oh, man. He
does all that shit. You think, good Lord. And then by the time something does happen that's interesting, like he, you know, meets the other clones. Oh, big surprise. They get into this fucking fight, and they kind of – he kills the guy in a way because he just leaves him there tied up.
Right.
He goes back to the other girl, but he doesn't explore anything past that. You're thinking, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit more inquisitive. Doesn't do anything.
Wouldn't you? I wanted answers, you know, things, but he didn't even bat an eye really at the whole experience. And in the end, the Independence Day ending with him sneaking in with the fucking, you know, thing into the alien ship in orbit to blow it up was a fucking joke.
I didn't like the flashback sequences and then the cottage stuff. There's a lot of wannabe Minority Reporting in it. Although I think that the visual texture of the film and the score is very nice by same guy who did Tron and
Alien 3. I recognize the score.
Oh, you're tripping. It's in there. Much. It's great. It's blaring.
Yeah, I don't know if it is.
I prefer this movie to I Am Legend, tell you that. Same kind of vein, I think, of a lone survivor. I know it's different with the clone aspect and things like that, but speaking of one actor kind of carrying a film, this is his I Am Legend, his Castaway in a lot of sense, because he's predominantly, it's him for a long stretch of this movie. And then there's another him.
He doesn't do anything.
Well, that's like saying Will Smith didn't do anything in I Am Legend. Okay, he went and ran a trek and did some pull-ups and shit, but...
Right, well, and then that doesn't make you want to watch it.
You're saying that I Am Legend's a better film than Oblivion?
I'm saying, why are you comparing shit to shit?
Because one shit...
You're not helping yourself.
...smells like shit, and the other one, no, got Febreze on it.
Not really, not really.
I still think...
Both of those films, nothing happens, and... in such a way that you just don't care about any of the characters. I mean, do you give a shit about anyone in Oblivion?
No. Well, when Morgan Freeman's character even came on, it was like too little too late.
It's a joke. That whole underground thing with the rebels and stuff is just a fucking joke in this movie. It just goes nowhere. And the dude's just like, oh, well, I'm going to send you off. And you're like, I've been watching you for a long time. You read books. And he read one fucking book. Who's been watching him for a long time? When? What's the dude? He doesn't do anything. You've been watching him do nothing? Repair robots? oh yeah, he's different than the other clones. Give me a break. I mean, at least put something in the movie to kind of help that, not just.
Well, he did have the love for the Super Bowl and the culture and this and that. He kind of had a fascination with the past.
How would you know that by watching him?
Well, they saw him reenact the whole last score of the Super Bowl when they were in the tunnel there in the very beginning.
And so you would know by that to let him run wild and he'll figure everything out and he'll save the planet.
He's different.
He's not.
He's the one.
He's the one.
He's the Joseph Campbell's prototype there. I'm agree with you. This isn't a groundbreaking movie by any
chance. It's a dumb movie.
I probably prefer After Earth to this movie if we're talking about shit versus shit. You know,
I actually would say the same thing to that, because at least After Earth had. So even After Earth's not great either. It's really too hard to compare anything to this because it just doesn't belong. I see why this opened so well, then died. And after having experienced things like After Earth and Pacific Rim, like I kind of get all these movies are just kind of crap. There's really nothing special about them.
I do think the visual design here is nice, and the soundtrack is what I'll stick to my guns on. But everything else, yeah. But
that doesn't make a movie good.
Well, at least it makes it watchable for one time. So if you really want to see it, you could see it. But we're not going to recommend it to you.
I mean, G.I. Joe is shot. You know, it's lit.
Oh, barely.
Oh, please.
That movie looks like shit.
It looks just as good as Oblivion.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah, Oblivion's got nice stuff in it, man. You got to admit, come on, that futuristic sleek look. The whole sperm thing that he's driving there, flying. First, it looks. There's one scene where his little pod goes into that deal, and I swear to you, it looks like sperm going into a uterus. It does it not? It made me laugh out loud. I thought, not since the blue chick in Avatar drank the water off the leaf has something been so overtly sexual.
He's being impregnated with ideas.
There you go. The themes. Themes, man. It's kind of a bad list this week, although I think that G.I. Joe 2 is the worst of the bunch and definitely amongst the worst of the year.
Yeah, I would agree.
Now, are we doing Force reviews?
We could. We saw a couple things. I mean, do you want to talk about our past Force reviews?
Well, it's been so damn long now. I can barely recall what we watched. I watched the editing film.
Yeah, supporting characters, and I watched Miami Connection. Or we can just do something else.
I thought we talked about these.
No.
No? The Freddie Mercury Connection?
No, I did mention that, but it was on a news episode.
We'll throw in your...
ever do this?
I thought we did already, but go ahead. We'll,
maybe we did. I don't think so, because I don't think we ever talked about supporting characters.
I liked supporting characters.
I would have remembered it.
Why did you recommend me that movie, out of curiosity?
I had just watched it, and it was about editors. So I thought, hey, you might want to watch it. I don't know. And it was better than I expected it to be. It was actually
pretty
different.
Pretty well written, I thought.
Fairly good as far as how the, I guess, the people interacted and stuff. I don't know.
Much better than Miami Connection, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, Miami Connection. You know, Alamo. This was an Alamo Drafthouse release, right?
Oh, they screwed the pooch on this one.
Well, they've been screwing the pooch on stuff because these kind of movies are hard to deal with. You know, this is an old movie, so this is like something that they would find that they're like, oh wow, people would be interested in because it's an oddity.
Yeah, it's a gem.
I don't know. I didn't like it. Too much singing. I believe I fast forwarded through a lot of the singing.
Oh, as well as I did. You didn't like the song Taekwondo?
Yeah.
But there was a Freddie Mercury lookalike in that movie.
Yeah, there was. And that was the coolest thing that ever happened in that whole movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty bad. I wouldn't recommend it. But it sounds like you would recommend supporting characters.
Yeah, no, I think that's a solid one compared to Miami Connection there. I didn't recognize anybody in that. But the editing, they got the frantic. Editors are a funny lot. I think always about, what was the Albert Brooks one, Modern Romance, where he's an editor and he's kind of, you know what I mean?
I mean, this is very similar to that, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Dealing with the editor's dating lives and how that works into their I mean, that's really what this movie is about. It's not really about editing.
Right. Well,
at all.
It's about subtext.
People and the connections that they make, you know. Yeah.
But I think on the level of filmmaking, little quirky romance dramas, I liked it as much as Entropy, you know, if you haven't seen that one, the old Stephen Dorff film, or something like that. It kind of reminded me of that as well. So, I don't know, as I was watching, I kept thinking of other movies that it was reminding me of. And even Once, did you ever see that one, the Irish musical film?
I never watched it, no.
Kind of that. I know it's a different whole milieu, but it's still... Force reviews this week though. What are you gonna throw at me here? You got something in mind? I got something in mind for you.
God, I don't know. What am I gonna give me mine and let me look.
All right, yours is you know, I'm curious to see what you think of this because we're both fans of all the guys involved. But I had a bad reaction to this movie, Pain and Gain. I want you to see Pain and Gain so that we can talk about this because you're a Bay fan. You like Wahlberg. You like Johnson, as do I. But something went wrong here. And I put it on the level of not as bad as G.I. Joe 2, but on the same list on there. I'm curious to see what you think.
Not as bad as G.I. Joe 2, but almost as bad.
Yes.
It's like G.I. Joe 2 if it were directed by the guy that did Spring Breakers.
No, it's like a good movie lost in a bad movie.
Huh.
You watch and you say, there's good things in this, but why aren't they coming together? Now, what do you got for me?
Oh, good Lord. Let me see. There's stuff that I know I want you to watch. What I want you to watch. You know what? I'm going to make you watch Looper.
Okay. I'm dying to see that anyways.
Because I want to talk to you about Looper, because I saw it for a second time on the small screen. So I'd like to get your opinion, because I hated it the first time I saw it.
Yeah, you really disliked them. I'm surprised you're recommending it to me.
Yeah. All right, so we got our little thingies there.
All right, well, our little thingies will be hanging good, and I think that ends our show. We'll be back with you very soon with our Force reviews and more news items. It's been great to get back on the air here. We'll be doing it far more regularly than we have been. This has been a hot summer, so it's been cooling down, and we'll be doing some special shows, and if there's any topics you'd like to see us cover, feel free to write Trevor or I at moviemavericks.com. And if you have not done so, go over to Box Office Ace and get involved with our Box Office Prediction Derby. A lot of things happening over there. I have faltered in recent weeks, but Trevor's pretty strong still on the game, so I need to get my title back. Although I see Joe has come down to earth a little bit, so that's always good news. Nah, I'm just playing. All right, to everyone out there, we want to say thank you for your continued support. Be sure to check out MovieMavericks.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, and wherever else you get your iPods. iPods at? My goodness. Speaking for you and me, we're out of here.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com. Warp 9. Engage! Ha ha ha!